Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Into the 11 o'clock hour, hanging out on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold. We'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour in 30 minutes right here on 610. Of course, your official Chiefs radio partner, home for exclusive one-on-one interviews, plus all the live press conference here on 610. Come Sunday, normally throughout the season, if not, how about Thursday to open up the season, all the Chiefs games going to be over on our sister station, 106.5 The Wolf.
That's every single day of training camp. We'll be the only sports radio station in Kansas City with those interviews starting tomorrow with a new man, Osemele. We'll be on the drive tomorrow. Time to be determined. But also, Mahomes will join him every week. Plus, we'll get player interviews, and then we can ask him fun stuff. So, what's not to like? It's a real perk to being the official broadcast partner of the Chiefs. By the way, did you stop getting, I'm a little bit worried about you. Did you stop getting those texts from that random group text?
Yeah, there was, sir, Gold I don't know, was, sir, sir, I don't know if I told you this.
There's
20 people attached that I have no idea who they are. They were all 913 numbers. And it started as like a, I guess it was like a sex spam type of text, essentially. It had
camp girls for you, he said, is what he said.
You were getting invited to an orgy.
I don't believe that was what it was at all. I didn't know any of the numbers whatsoever. You got to know at least one person, right? For that to work, I would imagine. I don't know.
You have to know someone to go to an orgy?
I'll lean on, I think
it's the exact opposite of how they work.
I don't think
work.
You need to know anybody.
I don't know. I mean, someone's got to invite you though.
They know what's going on.
There was some weird spam text, and I just hit hide alert, blocked the number, moved on, or whatever. Clearly it was spam. And people have proceeded, this by the way, it was a day or two ago. 2 days later, people have decided to start responding to the group text. I didn't block it, so I had to go through and block everybody else's number. And now people have Cody saw it. Someone sent a photo of themselves in this, like taking it seriously,
like shirtless in a mirror.
Shirtless in a mirror.
You couldn't just leave the group chat.
No, it's on. How do you leave?
You can leave a.
If you go, like, just go to the info section.
I did, and I blocked.
Thing that says like leave chat.
But it wasn't even like, it was just, they tagged 20 phone numbers in this, and somehow I was one of the 20. So I now had to go through and block each number individually. And I think I haven't got a text since the show started. So I think we're good. But yeah, one of the more bizarre random text groups I ended up in. I don't know. I'll let you know if anything happens on that. You've never been involved in that?
Can't say that I have.
The text.
Wait, orgy the text, or text?
The text. Well, I mean, well, now that's, yeah. And I mean, you can answer both if you would like.
The answer is no to both.
Okay. Okay.
Which question are you asking me?
Yeah.
Hey, Cody, casually on the radio at 11 a.m. Everyone involved in an orgy? I'm curious what the situation's like.
I get scam phone calls all the time. I just block the numbers.
I'm at the point now where if I don't know the number, I just don't. They have to leave a voicemail. I don't even bother with it. If your number is not in my phone, it goes to voicemail, and most of the time they don't leave a voicemail. It was a robocall or something like that. Someone on the text line said, "Did you give them the new phone? Who dis?" No. You think I was going to respond inside of that text? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. All right, so one of the big surprises in baseball right now might actually be the division the Royals lie in, the AL Central. We know the Royals have today off. They're back on the winning track. They're 8-11 on the season. And everybody in the AL Central, just an odd note, in the last 10 games, actually, everybody's 500 over the last 10 games. The league has been even the last 10 games. They are. The Royals do sit in last place. And Mark DeRosa, former big leaguer, was on MLB Network, and he was talking about the AL Central and had some high praise on what he actually thinks this division is.
Is the AL Central the toughest division in baseball right now?
Yes.
Send the hate mail accordingly.
I mean, I'm looking at it. It's pretty dangerous. 10-6 Minnesota at the top. Detroit's playing way above their skis. 8-5 Cleveland's tough. White Sox are dangerous and sexy. And the Kansas City Royals are coming, and they're coming strong. They got a couple pieces, and what's coming through the minor league system, they're going to be good quick.
Like hearing that last part.
And since then, obviously, the divisions stayed, like you said. That's just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Now it's Twins at the top at 12-7, Tigers at 9-7, White Sox at 10-9, Indians at 10-9, and the Royals only two games back of that at 8-11.
They are in the most competitive division in baseball.
I have not seen that coming.
No,
I did not see that coming.
Absolutely not. Especially if you just looked at even what the odds makers were saying heading into this odd 60-game stretch. And we knew that in a 60-game season that a lot of weird things can happen. Things are going to be unpredictable and all that. And so, you know, this might be one of them. This is one of them at this point in time. But still, and it, you know, we'll find out over the next couple of weeks when things really solidify itself. But and based off of what we've seen in the American League, and we know there's expanded playoffs, I mean, the Twins have these tied for the second best record in the American League right now. But if you look at the other divisions that have that, like, for example, the Oakland A's are the hottest team in baseball. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games, and they're 13-6. They have the most wins in the AL, if not in baseball, I believe, at this point in time. But the rest of their division, like the Rangers have eight wins, the Angels have 7 wins, the Mariners have 7 wins. But the balance in the American League Central right now, I mean, the Tigers have to be the biggest surprise by far.
Oh,
9-7. It appeared that they were already, like, they were tanking before the season started with some of their roster decisions. And the Tigers are 5-1 on the road and 9-7 and then tied for second place in the AL Central.
The American League Central is going to get 3 playoff teams. 3! If the season, well, by the way, if the playoff started today, they'd have 4.
Which is nuts.
And the Royals would only be 2.5 games back from the 5th spot, which isn't even another American League Central team. They wouldn't even be stealing it, technically, from another American League Central team. Like, if they were full-blown just trying to get into the postseason, that's not even the team they would try to pass in order to do it. The American League Central, surprisingly enough to me, at this point, has been the best division in baseball, which is, again, not in any way what I was anticipating, you know, saying at this stage. Because how the hell was I supposed to anticipate that? There are only 4 teams worse than Kansas City, so I know someone's going to point that out, right? The Blue Jays, the Angels, Seattle, and Boston. But you got to remember that a large majority of these teams are now getting in. And the Royals have pretty much the same record. They got an extra loss or two, depending on the teams, depending on who they played. Then Houston and Texas. And then they're just a couple games back of literally everyone else in the division. It's a complete wash. Now, it's deep. No one is dominating other than the Twins, who would be dominating more if the Royals didn't sweep them last weekend, by the way. But to this point, it absolutely has been the best division in baseball, which is wild to me.
It's also, though, why the Cardinals situation, and we don't know today, by the way, or whether or not tomorrow they're going to play. We're waiting for the answer today. But we know the doubleheader they were supposed to have against the Tigers. Right? It was supposed to be against the Detroit Tigers, and that's been postponed as well. So that's also impacting why the Tigers, too. I think the Tigers have played less games. So I think that's a big part of potentially where this could end up is, you know, with the standings and how different. And it's not crazy to think one division by any means can have 3 in there just by the nature of the way the postseason is going to be set up. Because it's the top 2 teams, right? It's the top 2 in your division.
Yep.
And then it's open, right? So there is a chance where you could have 3, and it's been close. And this, by the way, this is perfect for the Royals. You prevent anybody from running away from the division to this point in time. It's middle of August. I get it. But nobody's running away.
Middle of August, is it?
I know. We're
normally,
30.
If I said middle of August, if everybody was in within top to bottom, they're within 4 games of each other in this division.
Yeah, everybody's grouped. And that's great news for the Royals. Yes, they're in last place, but they're very close. They're 4 games out of the first place spot in the division at this point. And they have 4 games against the Twins starting tomorrow. Like, that's what's exciting about these.
Don't get me excited about the possibility of another sweep. Because that's impossible, but still.
It's not impossible.
Yeah, highly improbable, all right? That's the best. That's one of the best teams in baseball who they just swept.
They just swept.
They take 4 more against them. 2-2 would be tremendous.
Would certainly take that. Now, I like the way that, you know, especially if you can steal on Friday night. Junis is on the mound Friday night and out of the rotation right now. Like he pitched very well in his outing, but like that's probably the biggest unknown at this point. Still,
probably.
Even.
I mean, Brady and Bubich, you're talking about Brady Singer and Bubich. You're talking about things you don't really know.
No, but I feel like I know what I'm getting from them, and already sure. In a way, like at least what like Brady Singer's pitched at least 5 innings, right? in all three, four?
What are and giving up like less than four runs in every single start. Like,
if you know if you win Friday night with Junis on the mound, I feel like then I really like where you're at. Where you're talking about Duffy and Singer.
And Odo Rizzi hasn't been off to some tremendous start for them. So, I mean, you could make an argument for getting to him.
That's what's awesome about
he's only pitched in one game, but he wasn't like tremendous. He only pitched three innings.
That's what's awesome about the makeup of the schedule right now is you can go and get off work on Friday, and by the time you head to work on Monday, the Royals, I mean, both ways.
Yeah, they
can
get swept, and you're like, oh, no, what just happened?
Or they're within a game, possibly, of first place in the AL Central. Like,
think about that.
Yeah, I mean, other than two games at first. No, it's...
It can change very quickly.
Text
line says nearly a third of the way through the season, they're in last place. That's another way to look at it. Yeah, but they're only four. They're only four games back. So yes, a third of the way of the season, they're in last place. But they're also only what, a game and a half, two games out of a playoff spot in particular. So I understand what you're saying about they're in last place a third of the way in. Why do you think they're not going to be in last another third? And I get that, but the gap isn't the same. Normally, if they were in last place in August, they probably would be 15 plus games back. There's a decent chance, but you're only four, and that's why it's different.
Yeah. If I told you this was a regular season and in mid-August this year, they were four games back in the lead of division and 2.5 games back of a wild card spot, you'd been more than happy with those results. It's just how long can it hold? And mostly that's going to be continuously tested against the Twins, who they have seven more games against in their next 10 games. Then they're done playing the Twins, and their schedule gets a whole lot easier. Not way easier because we just talked about how good the division is, but a lot easier because the heft part of it, the Twins part of that, is out of the way.
Royals 8-11, three games under 500, off day today, and they'll take on the Twins starting on Friday up in Minneapolis. Jeff Long over at KU in the college football angle, we heard from Bob Bowlsby, we heard from Gene Taylor of Kansas State, also Chris Kleiman yesterday, and KU later in the day did have some media availability. And, you know, I think it's still amazing that fans are being discussed at college football stadiums. It's like, let's make sure you can actually have these games. But it sounds like Jeff Long over at KU is feeling good about the chances of having fans actually there for their opener, which would be September the 12th.
I do. Unless something changes dramatically, Len, with a COVID outbreak or something in the community, I think we will have fans in the stands. But again, that's just my thought at this point. It has to be approved really by the county.
And so it's going to be up to the health officials, as he said, ultimately, and what they're going to be able to do fan-wise. But it just, you know, that's still probably over the last 3 or 4 days the most amazing thing. I think I brought it up a few times. And it's where you have two conferences that are like, we can't even attempt to play. And then I still hear now the latest here locally with KU, and they're talking about having fans. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but just it's amazing. Like, the difference in the decision making and what one person is perceiving and what they're receiving on the other end as far as advice, where you're talking about fans not just playing. Like, we're thinking about playing it, and we think it'll be less than 50% capacity as far as our allotment, but I feel pretty good that we're gonna have fans. Like, that's he said they have a presentation they're gonna present to the health officials and how they're gonna accomplish that.
Two vastly different worlds happening in college football right now. It's one side who's like, too dangerous, man. We're out. We got to go. And then you still have other schools talking about fans. They're not worried the games. We're playing games. We're going to put some butts in the seats.
Isn't that the makeup of, quite honestly, outside of sports? Like, isn't that what we're seeing outside of sports, too?
I know, but for
this huge contrast.
But the other sports are playing. Like, every team in Major League Baseball is playing. Every team in the NFL is going to play, we presume. Or, like, when it came to college basketball, no one played. Or for a while in the NBA, no one played. And then a large majority did, or the MLS, all played. Except for the two teams who eventually got kicked out, so we'll consider that. But for the most part, it's all or nothing on this. I feel like when you find out two of the other Power Five aren't going to play football this year, and three of you are going to keep trying to press on, I probably wouldn't add any more irons in that fire. Like, let's see how many thousands of people we might be able to squeeze in. I feel like I just wouldn't take that risk personally, considering, 40% of the Power Five has just decided straight up not to play.
This was Jeff Long on his confidence, though, to move forward, not just with fans, but certainly just with the season.
Well, I have confidence that our current plan, our implementation of additional testing, our implementation of cardiac MRIs, we've taken another step in that safety level. We can't control the virus. We're not in control of the virus. but we'll respond. And, you know, there's no guarantee that there isn't something else out there that we're going to discover about the virus when we do and if we do, and it puts our student athletes in health and safety in jeopardy, we'll pivot, we'll turn, we'll find a new direction, or we won't play. So I'm confident what we have in place now is safe and effective based on what we know today. If something changes in the future, then again, we'll adapt. And that adapting could be, you know, discontinuing playing football in the fall. That's an option out there. Or I shouldn't say an option, a possibility out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody has to acknowledge that things can change, which is why, like, I'm excited to see the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC moving forward and planning on releasing schedules. They're going to have a football season. I do probably, like, temper my expectation a little bit just because I got to see the kickoff actually happen, because there still is, what, 30 days away from the non-conference opener for the Big 12 teams, September 12th. And they're still trying to finalize even their opponent that they're going to play. It sounds like it's going to be Coastal Carolina. Matt Tate of the LJ World reporting that it's going to be Coastal Carolina. Like, that's, they do have to be willing to pivot, which is why we really still have to see if they're able to actually pull this off. But one way or the other, the Big Ten, with their decision in the Pac-12, man, we are going to be looking at them 6 months from now and saying, wow, you made a huge mistake, and you potentially cost, not just revenue-wise, but years and years and years and years down the road, recruiting, all kinds of factors, coaches being attracted to your university, student athletes being attracted. Like, you risked it majorly. If all these other conferences pull it off and play and don't have issues, and you were the conference and the two conferences that didn't, that's going to have everlasting effects. And that's why
the conferences are going to hold it against you in recruiting forever.
Yes. And so the Big 12, the ACC, SEC right now, they still might have the same end result, which is not having the season. But for right now, they are giving it a go, and they are making every effort to make it possible by expanding their testing and spending some more money. They're willing to spend some more money because they know they can make money off this season. They need it. And the Pac-12 and the Big Ten weren't willing to do it.
I got to be honest. I'm pretty sure that that's why they're going to play, though. Because we kept saying, like, hey, is it going to get worse? Is it going to get worse? Is it going to get worse? I guess technically it still could get worse. But as a country, generally, things have been trending okay, especially since more places have implemented mask protocols. And I think these sports leagues have seen a lot about what makes these things different or what allows them to have the flexibility. So I'm actually feeling pretty good. Some college football's going to happen. It's just a matter of in what facet and for how many games. But they have a huge advantage. They get through these games, huge advantage over the rest of the conferences.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burger Beer text line, 913-576-7610. From the 816, what's going to destroy college football is when a player contracts the virus then passes away. The family sues the university. These kids have no protections from being forced to play or lose their spot. I did see the Senate is getting ready to introduce a bill, by the way, that's hoping to align with the name, image, and likeness discussion that's already out there, but align some protections for athletes. Now, that's something that's not going to do them any good right now, but more of a broader, more of a broader and bigger protection that may or may not exist. And I do think the liability is potentially why the Big Ten and the Pac-12 decided not to. They're concerned about it, but that was something that Jeff Long was even asked in the Zoom call yesterday. Like, did they discuss liability throughout the process and how liable these schools and conferences can be?
Our discussions about liability are based on us having a quality health care team, a third party health care team that's making the decisions about our student athletes. And again, this gets lost, but 2 years ago when Dr. Gerard and I, you know, worked with LMH and worked with UKHS to bring this Kansas team health together, you know what? That's what we were doing. We were putting the health care of our student athletes in the hands of professionals. It's no longer being filtered through AD, coach, administrators. Those decisions about playing and practice and strength and conditioning workouts, they're made under the supervision of physicians. So that's where you eliminate the liability. You have it in the hands of the medical professionals making the decision.
And not every school has that. I don't know the situation at Missouri or Kansas State and some of the other local schools in the area as well, but that hasn't always been the case where you had a true third party. It's what UCLA's players were wanting, to make sure that there was a third party involved in decisions. And so Now that's, you know, I don't know on the league, the legal end, really, like, is that good enough to avoid lawsuits? I have no clue. I have zero clue. But that's what he said, at least their extent of liability, at least what he's saying publicly, was that was their discussion, and that they feel like they're not liable, essentially. And their discussion was basically because they've got third party healthcare officials making those decisions, not coaches, not athletic directors.
Yeah, well, it's that until a coach decides to make that decision for someone. Right, so just keep that in mind. Before we start thinking about, you know, like DJ Durkin, right, allowing a kid to die on his field. Like, before we start, like, sometimes coaches take those own decision into their hands. They shouldn't, but it definitively happens that way for a lot of different various injuries and team doctors and those things before. So, yes, in the outside big broad picture, they're right, but they have to keep, you know, all the NCAA, not just Kansas. All of the NCAA has to make sure that their coaches or team doctors or the people that aren't outside of that don't try to take control over a situation that frustrates them.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he's saying is they have it's not, I don't know what Maryland at the time's policy was. That in that scenario,
no, their policy is that they're not in charge of it. I understand, correct. But that doesn't mean a coach doesn't try. Come on.
Sure.
Like, I understand, like, that's a good theory. That's a good way to operate. I hope they operate that way, and that will keep them out of some liability issues. Keep a close eye on the coaches in your system, is all I'm saying.
I'm with you. I'm not naive to it, but what I'm saying is, like, that what he just described, that wasn't even in place 5 years ago.
No. No, absolutely.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, it is different. There is some differences there. I don't know how many schools do that, and certainly we'll find out as we get close to the season and hope we have games and, like, what happens in those scenarios as well. We'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour coming up in 10 minutes. We'll specifically look at training camp and the season as well. Like, who is going up? Who's going down? Who's staying the same? We'll have another hypothetical to throw your way. We've been doing these throughout the start of Chiefs training camp. You may have also remembered we've been opening up the snitch line whenever it's needed. Whenever you need a snitch on somebody, we've enhanced the snitch line. And Joe Kelly apparently is not in favor of those out there snitching either, though. Joe Kelly of the Dodgers, did you see this?
Oh, I did.
He blasts the Astros. He calls them snitching. Snitchers.
This is the best possible news because it means the snitch line is open and it's improved. I'm encouraging more snitching. 913-576-7610 is the text line. But hold on a second. Let me tell you what Joe Kelly said, and then you tell him more we have coming your way. The people that took the fall for what happened is nonsense. Yes, everyone is involved, but the way the sign ceiling system was run over there was not from the coaching staff. So the players get the immunity, and all they do is go snitch like a little... Can I say that word? Do we establish something? Say that? Bitch. And then they go get fined, and they don't have to lose games. If Joe Kelly's out here saying they snitch like a little bitch, that means the snitch line is open. I mean, I don't make the rules. That's just the way it works. So the normal text line, 913-576-7610, is available. But we have some new availability gold.
The Cody and Gold snitch line has been enhanced, as you said. Now you can call in and leave a voicemail as well.
Oh, please do this.
It's a different number. You want to put this in your phone and save it? You can call the snitch line whenever.
And Serta will tweet it out, too.
913-662-1270. 913-662-1270. That's the snitch line. And when warranted, we're going to open up the snitch line on the text line. But this is always open.
But wait, there's more.
Uh-huh.
We also have an email. You got something you really want to get off your chest? You got 500 to 1,000 words you've been trying to put in about the way your boss, your friend, your coworker, a stranger you see have been handling these things. You can also hit us up via email. So the text, you know, the text line's fine. The voicemail now exists. And you can also hit us at snitchline610 @gmail.com. That's snitchline610@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 913-662-1270. The snitch line is fully enhanced to take full advantage. So if you leave us an email or voicemail, we will get to these tomorrow or even later today. And they will be tremendous. We have all the ways you are now allowed to snitch on Cody and Gold.
It's official now. We appreciate all the texts, and we can continue to do those. But now it's time to take it up a notch. And so we will be doing that. The 6th & Snitch line is fully activated and ready to go. Coming up in 90 seconds, Serta's got his fantasy flash looking at running back Aaron Jones, his impact on this 2020 season. And he'll also get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Who's taking that jump? Who's falling behind? It's next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2. 610 Sports Radio. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
Right here on your official Chiefs radio partner. Again, exclusive interviews only on 610 Sports Radio. We'll have live press conferences, all your Chiefs coverage here on 610 and our sister station. You want to hear the Chiefs this year? That is on 106.5. Wolf, really excited to be the official Chiefs radio partner. Tomorrow, The Drive going to have Cliche Osimile on their show.
Plus, Patrick Mahomes every week. No big deal there. I mean, this is an every week exclusive interviews. One-on-one with players are going to be appearing on all three shows. And start tomorrow, you mentioned, for training camp. That'll be every day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A player to talk to. Monday, Tuesday. You know, like every day that there's training camp, there'll be a player on this station hearing from your Kansas City, your Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, I might add.
Yeah, as they try to go for their defense.
This isn't just any old, you know, just some normal Chiefs training camp. No, they're the defending Super Bowl champions. That's who you're going to hear from right here on 610 Sports Radio. And our partners over at 106.5, The Wolf.
Absolutely. And it is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We do this each and every day on Cody and Gold. And we've been doing this a couple times heading into the start of the season. Jump? Maybe going to fall behind? Or are they going to stay the same? Looking at two players and whether or not we see a big jump or a fall back from each of the two players today that we throw out there for you. And let us know on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610, whether or not you think they're taking a jump, staying the same, or falling behind. It's Frank Clark and Rashad Fenton. Let's start with Frank Clark on this. I think you know where I'm headed based off of previous discussions and where I view Frank Clark and where he can be, where I think he will be come the end of this season in terms of how he should be valued and positioned and ranked in the National Football League. I think we see the jump from Frank Clark. I believe we see a jump from that because I look at what he was able to do, like this defense as a whole, what he was able to do on the back end of the season. Now, his numbers overall, we all know this. He started 11 games, played in 14 games a year ago, had the injury issues, had the weird stomach virus or illness, whatever you want to call it. And then the bigger deal was the neck, right? Some sort of a neck issue that prevented him from being the Frank Clark that we all thought the Chiefs traded for, and people were frustrated, certainly with the early part of his season. Still ended up with 8 sacks, was fantastic in the playoffs as well. I think we see a jump, and a lot of it is because if he has that production across a full season, and he stays healthy. I think the neck thing was a weird deal. The stomach virus doesn't really bug me because it sounds like that's something he's played with even when he was in Seattle. So Frank Clark, I expect to see a jump into where you won't think I'm as crazy when it comes to thinking he's a top 10 pass rusher in football.
Let us know on the text line, Smitty's Garage Burger Beer text line, 913-576-7610. I think he's the same. Look, I want to be the ever optimist on every single position, but that's just not reality. Like, the last time we did this, I thought a couple guys might take a jump or one might stay the same and take the jump, but he's the same. I know you're saying, like, that Frank Clark we thought they traded for, which was a full 16-game, 13-sack Frank Clark. Okay, well, he's only started 16 games once, and he's been in the league for now 5 years. Now, his first year, he was a rotational defensive lineman on an excellent defensive line for the Seahawks. So I'll let that one go. The following year, as a 23-year-old second-year player, he started to start more. He played in 15 games, but only started 5, but got 10 sacks and only 5 starts. The following year, his starts go down to 12, but plays in all 16, but only 9 sacks. He starts in all 16, he gets 13. He's a 10-sack player. He's more Tom Mahali than he is a Bosa, right? Nick Bosa. And there's nothing wrong with having a Tom Mahali on your team. Tom Mahali was one of the most consistent sack producers in the NFL over a 10 or 15 year period. It's how he ends up on all decade teams. He just gets his, but that's why he stays the same, which I don't think in Frank Clark's case, in some cases I would tell you that's a bad for a player, but in Frank Clark's case, I don't. It means you know what kind of production you're getting out of him. Now, you could tell me because he missed those games, this was going to be the year he saw the jump, 15, 16 sacks, because he's on a really good defensive line with Chris Jones and Okafor and others. This was going to be the season he took the leap. But for me, he's going to be a 10, 12, 13 sack guy.
Yeah, but that's right. That is a jump, though, from a year ago.
To me, it's not because it's not taking a jump to just stay healthy. Like, he should be healthy. That's what I should anticipate. And if he was an oft-injured player, which he misses some games.
Yeah, you've tried to categorize him as like an injury-prone player, which I fully disagree. We've had this discussion before. He's not injury-prone.
No, exactly. Like, he just misses a few snaps. He misses a few games. He's only been a full 16-game starter once. But he's usually there. He's usually available. So for me, it's not taking a jump to say you're healthy unless he's going to take a jump statistically from when he's healthy. 13, 14, 15 sacks. Again, back up there. If he's right around that 10 to 12 mark again, to me, he's the same player, which is not a bad thing because Frank Clark can be very disruptive at that level.
All right, then what about Rashad Fenton in the secondary? And, you know, it's I don't think you can possibly say he's going to fall behind. I don't, based off of where he is at right now. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's had the one season in the National Football League for Kansas City. And I look at it and I think this year, and this is going to be really dependent on Bashaud Breeland. And is he out just one game? Is he going to be out four games? And as of right now, he is out four games. He's appealing. He's out four games as of right now. He's appealing his suspension. We'll see what the NFL decides. Bashaud Breeland is. Rashad Fenton, yes, they've gone out and added. Legarius Sneed, a rookie. They brought in Antonio Hamilton, who I actually think might be the biggest benefactor from Bashaud Breeland's absence, or whether it's 1 week or 4 weeks. But I think for Fenton, mainly because of where he's at and how young he is, I think his playing time goes up a little bit this year, perhaps even in that mix, even with Antonio Hamilton. So I do think there's going to be a jump. This is a scenario where I think both players can take a jump. Rashad Fenton certainly has more room to jump just based off of where his baseline is. I don't think he can go down. One of those where it can only go up, but I think it goes up because he sees more playing time this year. So I think he's someone that might surprise some people this year and has more playing time. Him and Antonio Hamilton, I think, are the two biggest benefactors of a Bashaud Breeland suspension this year.
I hate to be the negative guy, but I think he falls back. You're saying, how can he fall back? He was barely on the field.
Yeah, so like, where's he falling back? He didn't start a single game. I don't expect him to start this year either, but like, where do you think he's falling
back?
By
staying the same, he becomes even less in the mix for the position. And the reason why I fear that for him, even though they had some positivities, they've said positive things about him, right?
Yep.
We think he can be a guy. We understand how he fits. And now there's positions outside of that. And you start having those conversations about like, well, they may, but their actions have done very different things. Now, most recently,
it was a rookie season.
Their actions have been a lot different than their mouth to the Chris Jones contract.
Yeah.
And eventually they brought it in, but they've thrown a lot of numbers in front of Fenton. They keep bringing in low-priced one-year veterans to compete at the position with him. They drafted guys like Legarius Sneed to compete at the position with him. And I know you're saying like, oh, but they needed extra corners anyway, but those seem like direct competition for Fenton. I know, like, the argument would be they didn't spend any free agency money at that position, but I still think they're going to put some free agency dollars in the cornerback position as well. So for me, I just think that they just, like, honestly, I think they're throwing a lot of competition his way because they don't fully buy in. Now, we don't have any evidence because I can't even see the reps he's taking at practice.
Yeah.
Because there's like four people who can watch that right now, which we'll talk to now that practice is starting to happen. And we know that our guy, like Herbie Teope, could be down there watching practice. But I've never gotten a real sense they fully believe in him because they don't talk about him like some of the young players they talk about that way.
No, and when I say he's not going to become what Charvarius Ward was last year. That's not what I'm saying. But I think he sees more playing time. He's a bigger benefactor, and you can say, well, they keep adding guys in front of him. But they are what you just said. They are low price, some veterans, some not. They spent a fourth-round draft pick. Like, with all due respect to Legarius Sneed, he wasn't a second-round pick, okay? He was a fourth-round draft pick for Kansas City. It's not as if they're investing high draft capital. They didn't go and spend their 32nd overall pick
on a what does that tell you about Fenton?
I don't think he will, but okay.
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean, like,
I think Rashad Fenton, I think he was really solid as a rookie. He might not be getting talked about, and maybe that's just because he's not a boundary guy. Like, he's more of like a nickel cornerback, but I think that he's got tons of room to improve, even if they aren't talking a ton about him. Like, Frank Clark, even with the neck injury last year, he still had 8 sacks, which is pretty much on par for what he does in his career.
That's why, like, I think he's the same. He's fine.
Like, he's just solid, no questions. Yeah, like, even 100% healthy, like, he's never looked like he's an 18-sack guy. Like, he's just a solid 9 to 12 sack guy a year. And I think Fenton, like, while I don't think he's going to be, like, an elite playmaking corner, if he can be a starting nickel corner for the Chiefs, that's huge.
He didn't play till week 6.
That would be a huge improvement from where it was. That would be a jump, like Gold talked about him. If he becomes an everyday player, like you said, he didn't play a game till week 6. If he becomes an everyday player as a slot nickel guy for even 4 wide, it's a bit of a jump because they're just using him more. I just don't see it. I don't know. Like, and maybe it's just because I haven't gotten enough tape on him yet to get the feeling, or maybe because they're just not talking about him the same way. It's been really quiet about them. And to me, this organization has just been really bullish about the players they love. And they mention it a lot early on. Like, they've talked about Antonio Hamilton twice as much as they've talked about Rashad Fenton, seemingly. And I know that that's you know, perception also, in people, my own
people,
brain.
Yeah, but, people are also asking Antonio, even though Fenton was only a rookie last year, and so he's still very, very new to the organization.
I'll be interested.
Hamilton was a veteran offseason acquisition, and I think people are going to ask you about the new guy you brought in. At this point, what we've seen from Fenton, there's not a ton of questions that can be like, we're right. We don't have preseason games right now. We don't have training camp's going to be closed. Fenton's nobody's trying to say Fenton's going to be this absolute stud. But I, you know, whether it's on the outside or whether it's a certain point, maybe it's, you know, your nickel corner, whatever. Maybe I think he's going to get more opportunities this year and they'll learn a lot more about what he can bring. I think the two, again, biggest benefactors, if you have a longer term suspension for Breland, is Fenton and Antonio Hamilton. I think those are the two guys. L'Jarius Sneed, it's a big ask for him because he's just a rookie and he was a fourth round pick. I think it's a big ask for him to step in come week one. As we continue in the Chiefs Red Half Hour, the big news in the NFL today is the news of a tight end resetting that market in a big, big way. George Kittle able to do that, a new 5-year contract with the San Francisco 49ers, reportedly going to come out to $15 million on average per year. Clearly the NFL's highest paid tight end. Hunter Henry was that at $10.6 million. Also, Austin Hooper had a big contract that he signed this offseason. But, man, this changes the market for tight ends. And naturally, you think, okay, what's the impact on Travis Kelce then? Kelce's older, though. Kelce has 2 years on his contract. He's a cap hit about $11 million this year, then $9 million next
year.
Which
is nothing. He signed for 5 for 47. Kittle just signed for 5 for 75 if you're looking at the difference in the market 3 years later.
Yeah.
Just 3 years later. If you're looking for one, obviously this impacts Travis Kelce, and he should absolutely be asking for more money. The question is, will he be asking for more money in these 2 years or just on the back end of this thing? Because I could see a 4-year total deal, 2-year extension that pushes his final 2 years over that number, maybe, let's say, George Kittle got. But the Chiefs will get to say, hey, you're 4 years older than Kittle. This is why the number is what it is. And I think there's a pretty strong argument to be made that George Kittle's tight end contract is exactly like Patrick Mahomes' quarterback contract. He is the exception, not the rule. And a good evidence of that is, look at this tweet from Dan Graziano. The increase we just saw in the tight end market, 41% from what the previous high was. That would be like the next wide receiver who signed a free agency contract getting $31 million a year, or a running back getting $22.5 million a year, or a quarterback getting $63 million a year. And while this market has dragged ass for years,
I was gonna say, it's time to make up for it.
The reason why it has dragged is because there haven't been that many offensive weapons around it. So for me, yeah, I know it's going to increase Travis Kelce's number, but if I were another team with a young tight end I liked, if I had Darren Waller, I'm not sweating paying $15 million a year right now. I assume I got to pay 12 now instead of 10, but I don't think this is going to throw the entire market out of whack if I've got a regular, everyday, normal guy tight end, or even a top end, like top 10 guy, but not the top two like Kittle, Kelce.
It's the elite of the elite. And,
correct.
And I do agree with that, which is, by the way, also, I don't think Kelce across his, I mean, certainly Kelce's not going to average $15 million if the Chiefs rework a contract or come up with an extension and along those lines. I could see, though, based off of where Kelce's numbers are at right now, what I say is like $11 million this year, $9 million cap hit for 2021.
$20 million over the next 2 years.
Yeah, when we know 2021 is going to be tricky for all the teams of the NFL, figuring out where the cap's going to be at. The Chiefs right now, they'll have $15 million reportedly from over the cap. I have said roll it over or use it on a Kelce deal.
But
now
that's the
numbers,
same thing. Rolling it over and paying Kelce is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a way you can do it. And if that's feasible for you, you know the number that you kind of have to get near or at least average out to at some point for at least a couple of the years. I think if you're already at $11 million cap for Kelce this year, why not go ahead and actually go this year, go ahead and rework the contract.
Get him to 12 or 13.
Go ahead and bump it up this year. You've got the money to do it this year. Next year is the tricky part. How do you configure 2021? And then, as you go further, you're willing to do it. Given his age,
$2 million extra the next year, and then 15 per the final two. I mean,
I would go up 3.
40, 50. I mean, you fine with essentially signing the same? It's 4 years, $54 million. I think at that point, most people in Kansas City would say, Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, Give me that deal.
That's the question. Am I willing to go 4 more years out? Is I think my question. I'm fine with.
Why not?
I'm willing to go if you want to say bump it up another $3 million or $4 million this year. I'm even willing to do that. He's 34 years from now. He'll be 34. I'm not saying he's going to. We've looked at this a lot. We've talked about Tony Gonzalez and his numbers.
Stretch that time out. Well, the reason why you're worried is because you're like, hey, he's old.
Correct.
And we have essentially zero evidence of what an elite tight end does in their aging season, other than one guy, Travis Kelce. Now we've seen other guys who are good pass catchers, like Jimmy. You know, like Jimmy G.
Yeah, Gonzalez. Because Gonzalez
was great.
Gonzalez at age 34, which would be what we're talking about in this scenario of a 4-year contract, sure. Age 34. So after that, Gonzalez was in Atlanta, and his age 34 season gave you 70 receptions, 656 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Now, that was obviously a different offense, but still, this offense
also,
is
Travis Kelce is a better tight end than Tony Gonzalez.
He is, even though that kills me from my childhood rooting for Gonzalez, but yes, you're correct. That hurts.
But it's
that
true.
One stings. It is true. 2011 was 35-year-old season for Gonzalez. He actually got better.
At 875 yards?
They got better at age 36. Now, that's not normal, okay? He went up to 93 grabs and 930 yards and 8 touchdowns. He had a ridiculous final 2 years in the National Football League, did Gonzalez. I think that, like, when we say, like, he's better than Gonzalez, yes, right now, but I think the back end, to have at age 36 and 37, those type of seasons is saying something about Gonzalez. It's Hall of Fame tight end for a reason, obviously.
If you do a 4-year deal for Travis Kelce right now, it's in the 2 that remain and 2-year extension, he will average 1,100 yards a season over those 4 years, which is worth every single cent of a $54 million contract because he's still way less than elite wide receiver money. 1,000-yard wide receiver money. How about that? Not even elite wide receiver money, just 1,000-yard Allen Robinson money, right? I mean, that's the kind of, because he's like an 1,100 yard. He like, to me, is like the stereotypical 1,100 yard a season receiver. Part of that might be Mitch Trubisky's fault. So
the way that's
I'll admit
set up.
That, like their current offensive system. But that's why, like, I don't know if Kelce wants to stay that low, but to this point, he has uttered not so much a peep about where his contract is versus Kettle.
Yeah,
and
nobody
he was still
really,
paid
man.
Like one of the top tight ends. Being paid $10 million a year over the next 2 years essentially paid you like a top 5 tight end in the NFL. Now Kittle is screwing that up a little. And again, we don't have a lot of evidence of aging tight ends who were pass catchers. Jimmy Graham fell, the wheels came off. In a really big way. And he was he's a really good pass catcher for a few years. But again, he's still not Kelce. Hall of Fame careers, 4 years, I got no problem.
And it's one thing, too. It is a 4-year deal. How much is it guaranteed? You know, reportedly, the Kittle deal in this 5-year is $40 million injury guarantees. How much would you be willing to guarantee in a Kelce deal? What's
and
the give and take there?
And guaranteeing the injury stuff a year ahead of time.
For the Kittle
deal.
For
Kittle. Yeah. So that, and that's a big deal. A lot of teams don't do that kind of deal. That is an important note of his contract.
So now the number is at least set. Now we can actually maybe have some movement on if the Chiefs, do they have to do it? Of course not. No, there's none. They have them under contract for 2 more years. It's just given where they're at with flexibility now in the 2020 cap and knowing what they would definitely have to do next offseason, do you go ahead and just get it taken care of? Like, they've been able to work out deals with them. Like, I'm not concerned about it. If they can, Chris Jones, Mahomes, they were able to figure that all out. Nobody should be freaking out about taking care of Kelce.
No.
They'll be able to maneuver it. But now you know what the number is, and it's on average $15 million a year for a tight end. And it's going to be a while. When you have that kind of increase, as you pointed out from Graziano's tweet, 41% increase. Yeah, you're not getting an increase at that tight end number for quite some time again. Like, it's...
This is Mahomes. This will take a few years for people to catch up to that number. But Kittle still helped a lot of tight ends. Like, anybody, if you're, not Austin Hooper, but if you're Darren Waller, you're the next guy to get paid, feeling pretty good about that number Kittle just put out there.
Last minute. Jets quarterback Sam Darnold says that he's spent the offseason making sure that he's doing everything he can to make his lower body as strong as possible, as well as keeping his core right to make sure that he's in incredible shape for the upcoming season. So he is just trying to make sure he doesn't get mono again.
That's right.
Is that about core strength mono? I thought that was the kissing disease.
Yes.
I don't know. Apparently you can like lose a spleen or something if you're not careful with mono.
Ooh.
Really?
Ooh.
Did not know that.
Come on, that's your guy, man. Defend your guy.
Oh, he's not my guy. I just am not done with him the way you guys are done with him. I think that's the difference.
I don't think he's very good.
I don't
either. I don't see it.
I think that the way I would describe it is that I've tried to is I just don't believe he has been given the fair opportunity for you to be definitively able to answer the question whether or not he's got it to be a quarterback, start a franchise quarterback in the NFL. We haven't got that answered yet because
it's a horribly wrong organization.
It's a bad organization.
But
he's
so
got
are
a bad,
the Texans and Deshaun Watson still looks good
but nobody's,
when he plays.
I'm not trying to tell you that he's going to be. I'm not trying to tell you he's in the top five NFL quarterback category, which is where I put Deshaun Watson. No, that's not. He's not going to be Deshaun Watson. Can he be a franchise quarterback and potentially a top 12 to 15 quarterback? I still think that question hasn't been answered definitively one way or the other. This is a huge year for him, no doubt. Unfortunately, he does have Adam Gase. His O-line is stunk. They did go out and spend a ton of money on the O-line. Should be much improved. Let's hope he doesn't have mono that allows him only to play in 13 games. He still doesn't have any wide receivers. And then now his defense is getting ripped apart with Mosley and Jamal Adams not playing and getting traded. So, yeah, I still think, unfortunately, this year's not the best scenario for him either. But at some point, yeah, he's got to snap, you know, out of that whole mold. And just like I've said with Deshaun Watson, you can't continually always use your head coach as an excuse and personnel as an excuse. At some point, talent has to take a team above what the limitations appear to be. And, yeah, Sam Darnold's going to have to do that. But I don't think you can definitively tell me, oh, Sam Darnold sucks. I think that's just inaccurate at this point. It's too early. Yeah, it's too early.
Is it too early?
I mean,
sucks might not be the word I use, but is incredibly blah.
They haven't given him. I agree. They haven't given him a chance to exactly flourish.
No,
but he hasn't looked good. Adam Gase is a terrible coach, mind you, but he just has not looked very good.
There's been a few games. There's been some stretches.
He had like a 4-game stretch at the end of his rookie season where he looked good.
I mean, Nick Foles has had 4-game stretches. Okay, it's not good. So's Gardner Minshew. Doesn't mean all those other times I watch him. I got a lot of Sam Darnold tape on the books now, and I'm like, I'm all right. If I were the Jets, I'd be like, I'm good. Look, someone's going to clean house eventually. They can't let him keep that job forever, can they? Jets are so poorly run, they just might. They just might.
They drafted so poorly leading up to prior to this year where they've had
their
prior general manager.
We complain about Aaron Rodgers' help on offense. The most help they've given Darnold on offense is, Le'Veon Bell after not playing
Bell
for a year?
A very disappointing. They didn't use him right last year.
No, but, I mean...
By the way, thinking of Sam Darnold, as you said, he's not having in and out every single day anymore?
Apparently
In-N-Out. I'm making sure I'm not eating whatever I want to eat. I'm not having in and out every single day and making sure I'm eating good food.
Probably a little bit much for an NFL quarterback.
In-N-Out is overrated, by the way, as well. I think it's good, but it's overrated. Whataburger, much better. Much better than In-N-Out.
I never had it.
Have you had
Whataburger's better than In-N-Out.
I've had Whataburger. Okay. I've never had In-N-Out.
It's not bad. It's just it's not as good as Whataburger. That's all. It's overrated. It's hyped up.
Next time you're on the coast, get you some In-N-Out.
Or in Dallas.
Or Dallas, whatever. Fine. That thought of as like a coastal Whataburger.
It's a West Coast thing.
It's a West Coast thing.
It is, but they got a bunch in Dallas as well. Go down there. That's a quicker route to go.
They always had it in surprise every time I'd be down there for
training. How many times did you have it on training camp or spring training?
They had In-N-Out and Whataburger.
Yeah, how often were you eating that?
I don't know. I mean, I cooked a lot still. I had time.
That's right.
I had time.
You were cooking.
I cooked for myself occasionally, like
you
an adult.
You had Whataburger in your backyard? And you have, I mean, here's, in fairness to that point, I had Whataburger in my backyard for over a year in Houston, and I didn't have as much as you would have thought.
See? Exactly.
It's one of those, once you know you have it, you don't go for it as much, I guess. All right, we'll head into the noon hour. We'll get to what's trending and what the Chiefs and a few other teams in the NFL were exploring, and it relates to you and fans. Plus, we'll be joined by Dr. Douglas Aukerman. He's the chair of the Pac-12 Student Health and Wellbeing Board. What went into the decision to not have football in the Pac-12 this year from medical experts? That's next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.